and welcome to the Low Tox Life podcast. I'm Alex Stewart, your host, and today is show 17. And I am chatting to one of my favorite people. As I say in the interview today, I take her everywhere I go, every e-course, every everything, because she just has a beautiful, conversational, relaxed style of delivering really important and wise information. Shalani McRae, a holistic practitioner, interfaith minister, and a whole bunch of other stuff under her belt, as well as being a nurse in the normal conventional medical model. So before I hook in today's chat, I obviously want to remind you that we have a wonderful partner offer this whole month of November from Etitude. And these guys are doing beautiful work in the area of sustainable bedding with their 100% organic bamboo lyocell bedding. And one of my favorite things about this bedding range is their closed loop system, where they recycle water up to 200 times in their production. That's the nerdy environmental chicky in me getting excited. But if you get excited about very soft, gorgeous, luxurious sheets at around 30 to 40% cheaper than the leading luxury bedding brands, because they don't have physical shops, so they pass all of that saving on to you, then you have to make the most of this. I mean, what a brilliant Christmas present to gift a sister, another family member, your wife, your husband, because then you both win. I think it's just a great time of year to invest in something gorgeous like this and gift it to yourself or to someone you love with our very special code, which is Sleep Better, through our special link, which is in the show notes today. And you can find the link to the show notes. It's always there at the end of the show. But if you wanted to write it down right now so you don't forget, it's lowtoxlife.com/podcast. And then just click on today's show, show 17, and it will take you straight to that special link that you have to go through to get 10% off. So I will leave you with the show. We have had such a great chat all around anxiety. I absolutely love the information and the wisdom that came from this talk, and I know you will too. And here she is, Shalani McRae. How are you?
I'm really well, Alex. Thank you.
It is so good to have you on the show. For people who haven't heard from Shalani before, I will have you introduce yourself properly in a second, but she's somewhere I take with me everywhere I go. I have interviewed her in every e-course I've done, in the Low Tox Club, because we're talking allergies at the moment. She comes with me everywhere because she is that packed full of wisdom. So, Shalani, I've made you blush, I'm sure, across the interwebs there. But can you please explain, just for the people who don't know you, how you came to be doing what you do today from a rather more traditional medical background yourself?
Sure. And really, Alex, it's all lovely what you say about me, but gee, the pressure's on. I'm going to have performance anxiety.
Now, you know what stress causes. We can't go there.
Okay. So as you said, I'm from a traditional medical background. My father's doctor, my mother was a nurse educator, and then she went on to do law, the other extreme. From there, when I finished, I was always interested in natural health. And I must say that mum and dad, where we were concerned, didn't hand out sort of medicine straight away. They often went to traditional remedies first. We're from an Asian background, and so mum would often concoct something on the stove, or as I like to tell people, and they're a bit shocked, but dad would give us creme de menthe if we had an upset stomach. But it seemed to do the trick. But today I hate creme de menthe, so I don't know if that has anything to do with that. But I went on to early childhood education when I left school and was a preschool teacher for a few years. And then I did the travel around Europe thing and then came back and did nursing. So I was really in the medical model at that point. And then I had my children, and my last child was quite ill from the time he was born. He was born early, and by the time he was three, he was resistant to all but the big guns in the antibiotics, and just constantly sick with respiratory type infections and things like that. And when they went to school, I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind. I started getting a little bit interested in looking at a different way of doing things as opposed to the modern medicine thing, especially because of what was happening with my son. And because I'd always been interested in natural health, I thought, I'm going to go and study naturopathy, but it was just for the fun of it. And so I just studied each diploma one by one, massage, nutrition, herbal medicine. And but when I started studying it, people started asking me questions, and, you know, by the time I did the nutrition, or was nearly finished doing the nutrition, people said, oh, could I come and see you about this or that? I've got this problem or that problem. And before I knew it, I had a clinical practice. And that was nearly 20 years ago. And the rest is history.
The rest is history. Now, okay, so anxiety is a massive topic. And I've brought you on to discuss this with us, A, because you always have a wonderfully positive way of spinning things, and you always make us think about what's really important in terms of the things we need to assess in our lives. And anxiety is affecting so many of us. Can you just share how you started to see it increasing in your practice first to begin with, and any of the common things that you saw happening again and again in the people who would present to you with anxiety?
So it's a huge topic, as you say, and then it's not, because there's a multi-pronged reason for a lot of the, you know, why people will get anxiety. So I guess initially I saw an increase. It was only a couple of years ago. The initial increase I saw seemed to do a lot with just society expectations. And I don't know if there was some correlation with not so much social media as such, but, you know, the whole body image thing and living up to expectations and that sort of thing. So it was very much on that level of the way we think, you know, our thought patterns and that sort of thing seemed to be having the biggest influence on people's anxiety, causing their anxiety. In more recent times, I started to see a correlation between people and their people, particularly women, and their diet. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that had to do with things like the, you know, going low carb, low sugar, all of that sort of thing. And we now have realized, and I realized the same thing had happened to me. I'd never been anxious in my life. I was like the furthest from anyone who you would expect to experience any anxiety. And I suddenly found myself, actually, you and I both know Kitson. I remember saying to her one day many years ago, wow, I think for the first time I know what it feels like to be anxious. And it correlated with me going low carb for no other reason except that that was the trendy thing to do at the time. And that was in about 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And I didn't pick it up for myself. I picked it up in some of my clients first, where I started to see this correlation. And then I realized, my goodness, that's your problem too. And once I started changing that around, I noticed a huge difference. So that's where diet can have a big impact on anxiety and cause anxiety. And that has that follow-on effect with your adrenals and your thyroid. That's why the anxiety kicks in.
So an interesting thing that I've just thought about as you've said that is, I don't know why I always end up becoming a medical guinea pig in these interviews, but I'm happy to put myself out there being a bit of a grey area bunny myself. Now, low carb is thought to be really great for people with polycystic ovarian syndrome. That which I have. So I did that, but then I found it totally threw out my T4 to T3 conversion in my thyroid. Yeah. But then I reintroduce more carbohydrates, even just in the form of bountiful veg. That's usually what carbs are for me, with maybe a bit of quinoa, and because I'm gluten-free for allergic reasons. And then my weight balloons out. So what it feels like that's a bit of a catch-22 there. What does one do when one has both issues?
Well, so that would suggest, like, when you have something with the weight thing happening too, I know there would be some level of inflammation going on, one could consider. And then, of course, we might then want to look at the microbiome and what's going on there, and just see if that's – if what you're eating is whatever the state of your microbiome is, or the microorganisms that are in there aren't dealing well with with your higher carbohydrate foods that you're bringing in. So like one, so one of the things I was going to bring up as well was it, with things like superfoods. So quinoa comes under that. And people sort of know me for having a bit of a not an anti-superfood, but, you know, just a cautious superfood philosophy. And that's because the main reason being because most people will never consider when things aren't going well that it could be the superfoods that are causing the problem.
Yes.
Because superfoods. And yet I have found so many people who are having issues with quinoa, with chia. One of the foods that causes anxiety for a lot of people is raw cacao, maca. They're all things that when people are looking at, oh, my goodness, why could this be happening, they won't consider that because that's healthy.
Mm.
But, you know, we know people have problems with strawberries and spinach. So it could be.
Yes, so why, and there is no food that is exempt from being looked at is what you're saying.
No.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So that could be the issue too. And maybe it's the microbiome that needs addressing or, the balance that's happening in there could be the cause as well. Yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it, how we revere foods, they get put on a pedestal straight away. Every, you know, health blog / well-being magazine is, you know, coming from every angle with every possible recipe, and it's so black and white, isn't it? Because as you say, we could be allergic to strawberries or spinach at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Why should this new exciting food that we've just discovered from the tears of a faraway virgin be any different? You know, it could still not be a great food for us. So
that's right. And look, what is hysterical to the point of sadness really is that we then have what I call the true superfoods, which are things like our traditional foods of, you know, eggs and meat and raw dairy and seafood and all of that. And yet we're pregnant women are told, and lots of people are told, to stay away from them when they're the exact foods that, you know, are the right things to eat at that time for a growing child.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, so we're making traditionally like foods we've eaten forever and that we're used to bad, and then all this newfangled stuff good.
Yes. And, you know, I think a lot has come from an awareness of factory farming around animal products being bad per se. I mean, of course, there are the people who just genuinely can't handle the idea of eating animals, and that's absolutely fine as well. There's always a healthy path that anyone can find within their own belief system and preferences. But I agree with what you say. It really is, for so many people, not actually an issue with being an omnivore. They don't have a problem with that. But it's the learning about the horrible state in which so many of our animals are reared and farmed and slaughtered, and the stress that they're put under. I mean, you know, as a wonderful farmer that I interviewed on the sixth show, I think it was, Paul, and I was saying, you know, there should only be one bad day in a farm animal's life if you are an omnivore. And, you know, the incredible nutrition that we can get from high quality, well farmed, ethical produce is definitely not something to dismiss.
Sure. And it's not only farming too. It's basically, I constantly come back to, is it the food or what we've done to it?
Mm.
You know, so it's the way any, you know, a lot of our food produced now is often the problem as opposed to the food itself.
Yes. So you mentioned thought patterns and a rise in anxiety. What are we getting more and more negative about? What's causing this change in thought patterns?
Oh, gosh, I'd be multimillionaire. As I said, I think it's well, look, a study or an article came out last week, I think it was, that said that most women today, when women were questioned about their biggest concerns, their number one concern was their weight. Mm-mm. And it was their concern over higher than about getting cancer.
Oh, wow.
So that tells us a lot about, because, you know, we have this utopia sort of figure that women want to reach with their, flat, you know, six-pack abs and their, you know, no body fat and all the, someone said to me, I saw someone on social media the other day pointing out the line in her arm now from the, from lifting weights, you know, that, wow, there's that. And, you know, that's what we're aspiring to. And I can, like, to me, it's, well, then it's easy while we're anxious, if that's the sorts of things we're aspiring to.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's obviously the stress of the modern workplace and demands on especially women.
That's right. And overscheduling. Like, we all have the same 24 hours, but there's a lot of overscheduling of our children, of ourselves. There's that whole competitiveness, which is just like an innate thing. Most people don't even realize when I'm giving talks and things like that and I talk about this, a lot of people have said that they've had light bulb moments where they've realized that at some subconscious level, there is that level of trying to keep up. And they don't see themselves as someone who needs to be the best or whatever, but it's just this insidious thought pattern that comes in because it's just, we're sort of surrounded by it. And we've got advertisers telling us that, you know, we could definitely be healthier, happier, prettier, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And here is the product that will get that for you. So, you know, there's this insidious subliminal messages coming in all the time, having this effect on us without us really realizing it.
Absolutely. And what you've said there is basically that the answer to your happiness is out there. It's in this product. It's in this course. It's in this everything, and it's not inside us. And we're then completely disempowered and disconnected from what makes us happy when we're not looking outside, just looking inside. And I think that's a huge part of it as well.
And there is another thing, and it's only because I had a case of this a little while ago that I think is worth mentioning. And you and I are both very big on not doing the guilt thing and all of that. So one of the things I always say to people is you can channel your energy into beating yourself up about something, or you can channel your energy into, wow, I've got this awareness now and look at what I can do about it, do about whatever the situation is. And I felt it was important to preface that first, but this was with a teenage girl who was suffering shocking anxiety, and early teens she was, and the anxiety had started to be an excuse for her. And there is talk about, you know, sometimes people can use things like this, again, it's at a subconscious level, as a way of not succeeding or because they can't cope with things or whatever. For her, we got to the root of it being her parents' really unhappy marriage and the arguing, and that caused such a level of anxiety for her. But when she had these anxiety sort of attacks, or didn't cope and sort of went down in a heap, all the attention went on her. And it wasn't so much that she wanted the attention, but they weren't having a go at each other. If anything, they became a united force for her.
Wow.
It's always going to be that sort of something, that's something to consider as well.
Yeah. And I think it's about not being afraid to have the conversations and do the introspective analysis of what's really going on. So when we experience anxiety, it can sometimes be connected to our gut health. Can you explain how that works?
Well, we know that there's this gut-brain connection that we have, connected by our vagus nerve. And so that explains things like why all we have to do is think about, you know, being nervous about something or stressed about something, and we can experience it in our gut. So that's, you know, people suddenly get the runs or they'll feel butterflies or the knot in their stomach, whatever it is. So it physically manifests just from a thought. And that channel or that communication system works both ways. So we can also have some form of dysbiosis. So we know there's a lot of talk now about the microbiome, which is all these microorganisms that living in various parts of our body, but the largest microbiome is in our gut. And the communication, when that's out of whack, it sends the wrong messages through to our brain, which can cause us to be out of whack in the way we think and cause anxiety and things like that. So, which is why a lot of people find when they do address their gut health, lots of mental health issues can either be relieved or end. Like they just don't have them anymore.
Interesting. Now, anxiety is one of the most common symptoms of Pyrrol's disorder, pyroluria. Can you talk to us about why someone might feel anxious when they have this Pyrrol's condition?
So Pyrrol's is it's a bit of a catch-22, and there's still a lot of contention about Pyrrol's, not only with the modern medicine people and the traditional medicine people, but even within those communities as well, as to whether it exists, whether it's a condition or whether it's a symptom. It's because, you know, a lot of people, it's a term that's only just come up now. So most of myself and my colleagues who have trained all these like decades ago and whatever, it was never mentioned. It tends to be a bit of a catch-22 because you can have a genetic predisposition to pyroluria, but it needs that trigger. Like most of all our genetic predispositions need a trigger. That's what epigenetics is. And the trigger for pyroles is stress. So you might be humming along nicely, making a hemoglobin, which is what where pyroles is connected. So you've got this making a hemoglobin, you've got these waste products and they get excreted. But when stress occurs, that pathway gets disrupted. And as a result, those waste products don't get excreted properly. They recycle and they're taking up vitamin B6 and zinc and those sorts of nutrients that are really important for our mental health. And as a result, we're not absorbing those nutrients. And that's why when someone is diagnosed with pyroluria, they are given those supplements. And that's when they often find that they get some sort of relief. But then there's a contention of, well, have you got pyroluria for life or not? And there are some people who say, absolutely, you do. I don't necessarily think you do, but the problem is, are you going to address your stress? Because if you're not, then yes, you are going to be on them forever because you've just got this constant depletion of those nutrients.
Mm. Now, stress can be something that physically occurs to you as well. Like, for me, I trace it back to having a really stressful birth. And that sort of set off a chain of events for me in my health. And, you know, if I look back, that was when I started getting white spots on my nails. That was when I started feeling a pang in my chest every now and then of anxiety, which I had never experienced before. And that's, you know, it was a real sort of moment where I felt like, as you say, like a switch was flipped, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you're saying that could potentially be reversed?
Sure. Well, look, as you said, I'm the eternal optimist.
Yeah.
Other nickname's Pollyanna. But I think anything with any condition or any situation, there's always something that we can do. And so when it comes down to things like, anxiety and any condition that occurs as a result of it, it's always good to go back to the source. And so with anxiety, we'd look at the source of why we're anxious in the first place. Is it a physical thing or is it an emotional thing, and try and do something about that? Other physical things. So when you were talking then, I'm just going to clarify in case I wasn't the only one who didn't get it straight, but when you said your birth, I thought you meant your birth. And then
No. That's 40 years worth of trauma, which actually, if you wanted to go there, my mum tried to push me out for 19 hours and I didn't come out, and I was in emergency C for almost identical reasons as my son, which could be interesting from a psychotherapy perspective, I'm sure.
It could. And it's actually one of the things I want to bring up about emotions in our body, being stored in our body. But yes, so physical things. I'll bring it up now because it is a physical thing. But one of the really interesting causes of anxiety, I don't know if you've heard of a muscle called the psoas, P-S-O-A-S.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's often referred to as the muscle of the soul. And there's muscles that are attached. I'm doing it. No one can see me doing it. There's muscles. There's muscles attached along your lumbar spine, like your lowest thoracic vertebra, and then it arcs towards the front of your body. So it's coming around from the back of the lower spine round to the front of your body and coming over the front of your pelvis. And it attaches into that the top inside area of your thigh bone. And a lot of people have really tight psoas muscles. Uh-huh. And as a result, And it's believed that that's where anxiety is held. And I have to tell you, both from personal experience of myself as well as a lot of people, that it can be almost miraculous for people who have had a long time of anxiety, the release they can get from releasing the psoas.
Wow. So how would one go about that? Is it the foam roller? Is it massage? Is it yoga?
Well, so yoga, there are moves in yoga, but it's interesting because if you have trouble with tree pose, it often, especially if you have pain when you're doing it or just have trouble doing it, and that's what happened to me. I was doing yoga and I was quite fine with tree pose and then discovered that I couldn't do it. And it's because of that tightness that stops you from doing it. And so there are yoga poses that can help. But, I mean, personally, it's probably a good idea to get yourself checked out by a chiro or osteo or someone to look at why that's occurring, and they can give you really good stretches. There are stretches and things on YouTube and that sort of thing which you can try. There's a stretch, there's a pose thing I do where I lie on the ground and I bolster up my shoulders a little bit and your ribs are sort of off the ground, and the whole idea is to just relax into it, and eventually you find your ribs go lower into the ground because your psoas relaxes. So it's just a really interesting point, because often we're looking at taking supplements or doing therapies and different things like that, and that's quite a simple, but it can be really traumatic for some people to do. They can cry, they can resist it because of the emotion that's held in there.
Wow. And I really believe that, because I've released a couple of muscles over the years with an osteopath and my chiro, and when they're really working in there, it's not necessarily that it's super painful, but there's just something so intense about what's going on that you do just want to cry. And I have. So that really explains that. Interesting.
Mm.
So, you know, don't look just to supplements or, you know, needing to lie down and do a meditation as a way of releasing anxiety. There could actually be
meditation while I'm doing it. So for me to just lie on the ground and have that, try and release the psoas at that time while I'm, and I'll just meditate, because the whole idea is to just really relax into it. So while I'm meditating or just breathing really deeply is a good time to do it. And the other thing you could do, you could get sort of a double whammy, because one of the other good things about, and I'm probably skipping ahead a bit, is to help with anxiety is grounding. And so if you did that out on the grass or on the sand or whatever, you'd be getting that added benefit as well.
Yes, definitely.
And then vitamin N, nature.
Vitamin N, absolutely. And I mean, how many people in the city who live a sort of 8 to 6 work existence and then have little kids they've got to rush home to and 5 billion activities on the weekend? I mean, how many minutes of barefoot in nature time are we getting a week? And a lot of people think it's a hippie woo-woo thing, but I can tell you now, after having interviewed at least 50 people where this subject has come in at some point in the interview, it is founded in many, many clinicians' practices as being one of the keys to helping us ground ourselves and relieve anxiety. So if you haven't tried grounding yet, kick off your shoes, find a park, find a beach, find the ocean, find some soil, even if you've just got, you know, a little bit plot of soil in your apartment block, anything you can find to just ground with nature, and it'll be really
included in your day. My husband will say to me, how can you, he once said to me, how can you take your shoes off when you go, like my slippers, off when you go outside to hang the clothes on the line? And because that's how I get to do some grounding. I get to connect with the earth with my bare feet. And he's like, oh, right, okay. So just, you know, so I'm still doing household chores and things, hanging the clothes on the line, bringing them in, but I'll make sure that I'm doing them barefoot. I'll water the garden barefoot, you know, that sort of thing, so that I'm getting that little connection.
I love it. I often just take my shoes off for the walk down to school with the little guy and make sure I get the garden beds on the way down. Because if it's a busy day and I've got to get back to home office and get started, I want to make sure I've at least had 10 minutes of earthing time before I do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can always find time. You know, once you've realized it's something you should do and it's such a lovely thing to do and you really do feel so refreshed straight afterwards, even just 5-10 minutes, then, of course, you're going to want to do it more and more, and you find ways to do it more and more. I do, you know, silly things like – a silly thing like if I've got to pick up my son at 4 or 5, I'll pick him up 5 minutes early, I'll get there, and I'll just stand in the park for 5 minutes before I go in. And that's quite a nice way to finish my work day and welcome in the parent time as well,
which
I don't think we do enough transition work in our lives to sort of end one activity before we're starting another activity, and the acknowledgement that should come around doing that, so that we're not in this state of blend where everything's just rolled into one big hectic day.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because I think Maggie's Dent has just posted about it today, and she talked about it. She was spoke in Sydney last week, and I went to hear her, and she talked about the importance of, how in Western Australia there's so many nature grounds and things now, and that it's really a great transition to allow the children 15 minutes to just run in nature or play in the nature and whatever from that time of finishing school to getting home. And that also gives you that little bit of a time out as well, be it to chat with other parents, to just sort of breathe deeply for a little while, and just take that transition time for yourself and for your child. And it can make a huge difference with children. And I know she, when she spoke last week about this, something, it really reminded me of my son, who I just thought he was the biggest rascal when, you know, at home, and I'd take him to school and they'd say he was just so wonderful, and then I'd pick him up and he'd be horrible again. And I just of my own accord, I mean, he's 23 now, and I'd say, I thought to myself, you know what, he just has to try so hard being good at school that when he comes home, I cop the brunt because he just relaxes. And they were exactly the words Maggie used, like exactly what she said happens with a lot of children, and they just give you their worst because they've just had it so pent up all day and trying to be good for the strangers or people they're not as comfortable with.
Well, we do that in relationships as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you unwind, you feel like you can say anything, all the negative stuff can come out, and, you know, is that productive? It's interesting, right. Very interesting. Okay, So we have these busy modern lives. What exactly is happening? What are some of the things that are happening to our bodies when we're in this state of anxiety?
So it's similar to what's happening, I guess, when we're, well, there's physical things that we can all feel and see when we're anxious is, you know, we'll be increasing our heart rate, our blood pressure goes up, we might feel breathless, all of those sorts of things that are just, okay, you know, it might not be such a bad thing in the short term, though you wouldn't want to be doing them too often because, you know, they're elements of stress, and small elements of stress on the body aren't such a bad thing. Sometimes they can sort of fire us up to get moving and go. But when it's to do with things like anxiety and we've got this constant low buzz happening, then we've got chemicals that are being released constantly, like drip feeding out of us constantly, that aren't very beneficial to the functioning of our body. And it can cause problems both with our gut and our microbiome that we know is so important with to do with all areas of our health. It can have effects on our cardiovascular system, on our endocrine system, which is all our hormones. So there's some of the things that can happen when you're having in an anxious state.
Right. And I mean, that's what's wrong with society in a nutshell right there. You've said cardiovascular issues, you've said hormone issues. And I mean, if you look at what's happening to us as a people in the Western world, at least, is many, many more people are having cardiovascular issues despite, you know, everybody's efforts to do the right thing elsewhere. And of course, our hormones are all haywire. Fertility is on the down, and you know, it's anxiety is just such a huge part of this. So how do we actually, because, you know, someone out there who's experiencing anxiety, perhaps the low grade chronic anxiety that you were talking about, where it's just that steady release of chemicals that set off negative reactions in various forms and to varying degrees, how do we actually shift the paradigm? Because we might be thinking, but I can't change my life. That would mean I'd have to quit my job. How do we actually start to become less anxious? Do we have to quit some things and let things go?
Well, probably sometimes we do. You know, there's a saying, you can have it all, just not all at once.
Yes.
And I think today we are trying to be everything and do everything and keep up all the time. And or sometimes it's just a matter of shifting things around a little bit. And again, because, you know, it's one of the things I often say about supplements too. Someone will come to me with this whole bag of supplements and I'll say to them, so why are you on these? And it'll be this gradual thing of, well, first I went to this naturopath and she put me on these ones. And then Auntie Mary said that this would be really good for the cramps I was having. And then I read that this would be really good for, and then, so they've got this, they've collected all these supplements over a period of time and they just keep taking them and they don't know if they're working or not or whatever. And it can be similar with our lives that we sort of, we're working at one level and then we have children. And so now we've got other things to continue with. And then we take on, you know, doing courses or activities, extracurricular activities, be it us or our children, and we're just adding on and adding on more things that to our lives, and we don't sort of step back and go, hang on a minute, let's do a bit of a re-evaluation here and see what are the things that I'm doing that are serving me and what aren't, what can give a little bit, what brings me joy that sort of thing. Because, I mean, ultimately, you know, life's not meant to be hard. It's meant to be joyful. So don't do things that don't bring you joy if you can avoid it.
Mm. And it's a real case of crowding it out slowly over time, isn't it? And just raising that consciousness and thinking, actually, every time I say yes to that particular catch-up, I walk away from that coffee or that get-together feeling negative or feeling worse about myself, and really just raising the consciousness across all activities. And, you know, I think sometimes we just have to work. We've got to do the work we've got to do to get the freedoms we want to, you know, jobs aren't always an easy one to go, okay, fine, you know, I'm answering the calling of lowering my anxiety and I'm quitting my job, but I have no plan. So we definitely don't want that happening out there. But I really think that there are so many things that we say yes to someone asked, so I say yes. And we over-yes ourselves to the point where we get ourselves either completely overscheduled, which causes anxiety in itself, or scheduled with certain things that we actually don't even want to be doing in the first place if we were to really slow down and think about whether we enjoy that activity or not.
And it's an interesting thing because it's something, it's been a work in progress for me. And one of the things I started doing was saying no, but without anything that came after the no, which is the most important part. But people started seeing me as busy. And I thought that was really interesting. I'm like, well, I don't feel like I'm here. And what it was because I was saying no and there was nothing that followed on from that, people just assumed that my diary was super full with, you know, work and important things. And they were important things, but they were important, like having a coffee with one of my closest friends that we always make a point of doing every 2 weeks, a mum from Mother's Group, so 26 years later we're still friends, and that's my debrief. Little things like that that are really, really important to me. But unfortunately we live inside. If I say, well, like, because for me to have this catch-up or for me to go to yoga or whatever, that's what I'm going to be doing instead, people sort of are like, oh, hang on, you haven't got your problem. But as far as I'm concerned, I have my...
Absolutely. I think, you know, priorities are really, it's an interesting word, isn't it? Because someone was saying the other day, I was talking to a couple of friends and they were talking about, oh, those people who schedule everything in. And, you know, and I didn't contribute and I couldn't figure out why I didn't contribute. And, you know, and they're always saying no. And I thought, hold on, I actually think I'm that person.
Yes.
And I refuse to go out more than two nights a week because, you know, for work functions or social catch-ups, it will never be more than two while I have a small child because my priority is actually him. And that's not a bad thing. And missing out isn't actually missing out because it's just a different priority. And I think often scheduling and really being conscious of what we want to say yes to and what is therefore not possible because you've already said yes to that and that and you won't do a third night or whatever it looks like for you in your life or what your priorities are is actually a really beautiful thing. And I find a lot of freedom in having a great schedule that, you know, on Monday I will never have a meeting, never ever, because that's my day to... you know, prioritize my week, to have some creative space, to manifest what I want to create for my community on the blog, who I want to interview in the podcast. It's my spacey day. I love having all that space. And it doesn't mean that I don't think something else is important. It's just that Monday, that's not going to happen. Nothing is, in fact, other than what I have said is going to happen. So, and I believe that helps me be less anxious because I do have anxiety tendencies for the Pyrrol's imbalances and for, you know, having probably the biggest scaredy cat dad in the universe growing up, you know, and that's something I've, you know, been trying to shake myself all my life. I love my dad dearly, but he is terrified of everything. He's just one of those jumpy people. Oh, no, don't do that. You know, he's just, that's how I grew up. And, you know, I think of my daredevil friends who were allowed to run rife and do crazy things growing up, and they are fearless individuals. They never would once think that walking along at night would be a dangerous situation for them in the city of Sydney. Me, on the other hand, I'm looking behind, you know, I'm like a ninja in the streets making sure everything's okay, or I will get the cab to take me right to my door. even if I'm sharing one and the other person's down the road. It's just that conditioning of my psyche. I don't believe it's a gut problem. I don't believe, you know, I just think sometimes we are the product of how we grew up.
That's that really stepping back and having a, and looking at and really embracing who you are and what works and what doesn't work for you. Like you were saying with the scheduling and all of that too. I'm someone who I need routine. So just recognizing and embracing who you are and if it's not working for you, putting in strategies that'll that can help you get over those sorts of issues.
Great. So how in the minefield of information on the internet does someone start to take the steps of really thinking about what might work for them? Because again, if we come back to what we said right at the start, we always think the answer is out there. And sure, it's good to look out there, but I think we always have to be very mindful of what out there is in relation to us, our own priorities, our own situation. How would you suggest someone go about starting to implement some anti-anxiety strategies?
So as I said, the first thing we have to do is work out what the source is. And yes, we aren't going to know the source until we stop and just check in. And I think that's one of the biggest obstacles to our well-being today is that no one checks in with themselves. So it and so it's got it's like this whole what is it having a swarm of bees and trying to or a swarm of flies and trying to swat them with a pencil, you know, it's sort of you're just fluffing around trying a bit of this and trying a bit of that. But if you just stopped and really checked in, and this is why it is just so important. And I know there's so much woo-woo around it, and it's really unfortunate because not only myself, so many people have seen the benefits of, you know, what I call setting your compass in the morning. So just taking that, even if it's the minute you open your eyes, so just deep breath and checking in with yourself and checking in with the way you're thinking. You know, are you thinking anxious thoughts? Are you thinking stressful, dread thoughts of dread and that sort of thing? And then the onus is on you to turn that around. And that can really set your compass for the day. But also just checking in with yourself. So that's a good way to just start your day. But then taking moments out where possible. And look, for some women, I get it's the only time they get is when they're sitting on the toilet or they're standing in the shower. And even some women don't get that. But, you know, of taking that time to really sit with yourself. And I'm not talking about 30 minutes or whatever, but even just like 2-3 minutes while you're watering the garden or whatever, and just checking in with what makes you feel good, what could be the source of things that trigger you, just those sorts of things that can give you an idea of whether of where to begin. Because if you can get an idea of what's causing it, then you have a better idea of what to start with to help yourself. And there are so many things that we can do to help ourselves. As always, for me, it always comes back to the breath. So long, slow, deep breaths help prevent anxiety. Grounding, that whole vitamin N thing of nature, is a really wonderful way of it feels very consoling and embracing and nourishing almost of being in nature in some way, even if it's just, as I say, lying on grass. I know it's been made fun of, but literally you really can get so much comfort out of hugging a tree. I've done it. And seriously, it's shut your eyes and really tune into that tree. It can be one of the most calming things you can do. Things like essential oils often help people a lot with, as you would know, with dealing with sort of anxious episodes and things like that. And things like bark flowers, often people, if they take bark flowers for a little period of time or some of the flower essence, they find that helps get to the root of problems. Sometimes things bubble up and then they're able to deal with what's going on for them.
Okay.
Yeah. Dance is a wonderful thing. Dance is something I've got into a lot, which is a great release. So these are all physical sorts of things that you can do. And then there's the more supplementally type things. So if you've tuned in with yourself and you really believe that it might be a nutrient deficiency or, well, let's go still on the emotional level. So homeopathics could be helpful still with the emotional level of anxiety, if that's what the source is. But it can also help if it's physical as well. Mm-hmm. Then we've got things like the various nutrients. So with pyrroles, we're looking at things, and whether it's pyrroles or not, we're looking at things like the zincs and the B6 and all of that. But all of that, as you know, I always say go to a practitioner, get tested first, because you don't want to be taking anything that you don't need. And remembering that something like magnesium that a lot of people are deficient in as well, that's a relaxer. And it's not just a relaxer of your muscles and things like that. It's an overall relaxer. So mentally it helps you relax as well. So be it magnesium baths, or if you need to be taking a magnesium supplement, that's something that you could, once you've checked in to see whether, you know, what you think your source is, that might be something that can be really helpful as well.
And given so many people are deficient in magnesium, and given it's a relatively safe one to supplement with, you know, without seeing a practitioner, I mean, one of my favourite things is the magnesium cream, and I'll pop it in the show notes, but you literally just pop a little bit on your hands, rub them in your palms, and make sure it's on your pressure points of your wrists. And I swear to goodness, it really does straight away just make you feel and calm. It's just beautiful. So, you know, that's just something anyone can do from today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. And also it's things like just checking in on what you're doing, how you're living your life. So this morning I was walking, we're fortunate we live on the beach, or not on the beach, we live near the beach, and I was where there's an esplanade we can walk that is literally, the water's right there. And I'm walking along and it's just beautiful, you know, there's the ocean and it's all lovely. And the amount of people I saw looking at their phones while they're walking, like they've got their full gym gear on and all of that, you know, and they're going for a walk and they're looking at the phone. Look at this, like you are surrounded by such beauty and you're looking at your phone.
There's plenty of time to look at your phone during the day,
but it's automatic. I think for a lot of people automatic thing. So it's either you don't take your phone with you if you think that you're going to be drawn to do that, because seriously, you know, phones have only been around 20 years, so before that we managed for the 20 minutes or 30 minutes you go for a walk or whatever of not having your phone on you. So maybe looking at what we're doing subconsciously, that could be increasing our anxiety as well.
Do you feel that phone use, especially smartphones, has given rise to anxiety in some of your clients?
Absolutely. And I know, I say that with confidence, because we, just like we do with food, we do an elimination diet, we do it with social media and with the devices, and what people experience, they themselves are shocked. And that can just be, it doesn't have to be a whole weekend. It can even be things like going for 1 hour and people start to feel angsty and all of that about not having it with them. And I say to them, when they're starting to feel that, that's when you need to increase the time to another hour to see if you can counteract it with feeling calm by not having it there. But just like that, definitely, absolutely, without doubt, can contribute to our anxiousness and stress.
I know, and that's that harsh truth, isn't it? I think everyone's gone, oh, damn it, yes, he said the phone. But because I work online, and I mean, there would not be a day that I wouldn't have less than, say, 50, 60 notifications across the day, and that's a good day in Facebook, and I love that. I love working for my community. But I have found that what I need to do to then make sure I get my own time, again, it's a scheduling thing. It's just being conscious of what that can do to you, to know that you need to disconnect from that in the first place. And for me, that's when I go and do the school pickup and whatever I might do after school. You know, we might go to the shops, or we might go and have a little afternoon tea somewhere, or we might just go for a little walk. And I just don't take the phone with me. And I spend that time connecting with my son, having a chat about the day. And it's just not even an option, because it's not even in the bag. And I really find that helps me.
That's right. And I think, like with some people, I've said to them, you know, when they've gone, oh, you want me to go without my phone? And I say to them, you know, just the fact that that's a problem suggests it's a problem.
Darn you and your wisdom, Shalali. That's no fun.
I can just give you the tools. What you choose to do with it is your business. So
something that occurs for a lot of people who do experience anxiety is this irrational sort of phobia stuff, you know, whether it's spiders, a particular type of spiders. I know I experience it less and less now, thank goodness, because I've really worked on it. But there was a time in my life that I was irrationally terrified of huntsman spiders, right, to the point of paralysis, sweats, getting the runs because I was so anxious in my body. As you said, you know, that's that gut-brain connection. And, you know, for someone else it might be flying. Is there something we can do around phobic anxiety?
One of the before I tell you, I just got to tell you this. I just heard this on the radio the other day. You'll love it. That in our lifetime, while we're asleep, there will be 30 occasions where a huntsman spider has walked over our face.
Gosh. Thanks for that. That's anyway, excellent.
So to help relieve the phobia of that, one of the things that I'm a big, big fan of is EFT or tapping, emotional freedom. Okay? So that's something that is excellent for phobias. And I've just over the years, I've been a practitioner of that for about 10 years now. And over the years, the things I've seen it help with is just phenomenal, with addictions and with post-traumatic stress things and with phobias of, there was actually a number of years ago on TV, they did where people were scared of spiders and they did EFT, like tapping with them. It was just a generic, like a 60 minutes type TV show or something. And the people did tapping and then were able to have spiders crawl on their hands and whatever without any problem. So I wasn't spiders, it was snakes. So EFT is something that I recommend people look, you know, you can Google, there's the tapping solution and there's so many videos on YouTube where you can tap along with people and you just put in what your problem is or what your phobia is and can tap. And that's a really wonderful thing that you can do.
Oh, how exciting. I'll pop a couple of examples of common phobias and tapping videos in the show notes for everyone.
Yeah, great idea. So that the one is the one that mainly when you're talking about phobias and there's lots of therapies that you can do with psychologists and things like behavioral therapies and things like that too. But obviously you'd have to go to a psychologist or some sort of practitioner to help get assistance with that sort of thing as well. But there are things that we can do when it comes down to phobias. So there's the equivalent of like a desensitization type thing with phobias as well, but you'd have to go to someone who, maybe there's e-courses and things where you can do it for yourself as well. But yeah, then they've proven successful for a lot of people. Hypnotherapy works for so many people. So that's another thing you could look at doing as well, as far as those sorts of therapies and things for phobias as such.
Yes. And I think, I mean, the reason I wanted to mention phobias in relation to anxiety is because a lot of people think they're an anxious person, but it could actually just be that because of your phobia at a subconscious level, maybe you're walking into every room looking for a spider in all the corners, or maybe, you know, if you're doing that throughout the whole summer, spring season, that's a lot of energy that is causing an anxiety that actually, if you address a phobia, that is the root stem of your anxiety, then your anxiety could well go away. So it comes right back to exactly what you said at the beginning, which is address root cause first and foremost, because it could be many different things. It could be either a trigger emotionally, it could be nutritional imbalance, it could be phobia, and then there are so many tools that we have to deal with the various types. So our best defenses against anxiety long term, as you said, obviously getting to the root cause. Physical movement is something you're quite big on, isn't it?
But the anxiety can be caused by not enough and too much. I think there's a difference between movement and exercise. And exercise can be really dramatic and, you know, especially endurance stuff or really going for it 5 days a week without a break. You know, anyone in fitness will tell you that the magic happens in the rest days. So just being conscious of that. But not moving enough can also be part of the problem, because they say that motion follows emotion and vice versa. So moving, a lot of people who have depression or have any anxiety, they tend to not move as much, even though they might be the fidgety, irritable sort. It's not actual whole body movement. So that's where things like yoga can be really helpful too, because it's more a gradual introduction into the movement.
Or just taking a beautiful long nature walk.
Absolutely,
Well, thank you so much, Shalani. I think that we just covered so much there, and hopefully for everybody who's listening to us today who has experienced anxiety in one form or another or is experiencing it right now, that has given you some ideas. Shalani, is there something you'd like to leave everybody with today?
What could I leave? Well, you know, I think the most important thing, because anxiety we tend to see more to do with things like our thought patterns and the way we think, is and the lack of connection that we have with ourselves, I'd really encourage everyone to embrace themselves and their uniqueness. I think today a lot of anxiety comes from trying to be a clone of someone else or a certain look or whatever. And there's a saying, it's better to be a first-rate example of you than a second-rate example of someone else. And I think just to own yourself, to know yourself first, and to know, own yourself and be loud and proud about who you are. It's also a great example to your children. And something I posted the other day that said, be the adult you want your children to be.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I think that's a really, like, again, it comes back to that whole connection thing of knowing who you are and just owning it.
Own it. I love it. I mean, what could be two more powerful words to finish a session on anxiety? Own it, own who you are. Thank you so much. Please remember everybody to go to the show notes. We've popped a few extra resources there. And I will see you, Shalani, no doubt very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's show. Check out the show notes at lowtoxlife.com/podcast. And if you wanted to maybe share a quote and something that really jumped out for you, you can find us on Instagram at lowtoxlife or simply hashtag lowtoxlife across social media. I absolutely love bringing you the show. Thank you for any of the star ratings or one-line reviews that you guys have left. It helps me know what you've been loving and what you'd love to see more of. I'll see you next week.
Who is that?
Hi, Puck Pass.